This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580 and FM 90.9 HD2. You'll also find us online at will.illinois.edu. Good afternoon, I'm Celeste Quinn. On the program today, we're going to talk about preserving summer's bounty of fruits and vegetables. We'll talk about jams, jellies, and other sweet preserves, as well as pickles, chutneys, ketchups, salsas, and relishes. Our guest is writer and editor Linda Ziedrich. She is the author of two critically acclaimed books on stretching the harvest and getting the most out of our produce. The praise comes from food writers and chefs, including Charlie Trotter, Chris Kimball, and Martin Yan. Linda Ziedrich is the author of The Joy of Pickling and The Joy of Jams, Jellies, and Other Sweet Preserves. Both are published by the Harvard Common Press. Listeners, whether you're an old hand, a novice, or just thinking you'd like to try your hand at pickling and or making jam, I hope you'll join us this afternoon with your questions and comments. Maybe you have a recipe you'd like to share. Join us with a telephone call. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Our toll-free number is 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. And when you call in this afternoon, our technical director, Henry Frain, will ask you for your name and a phone number. And when the program is over, we'll draw two names, and those individuals will receive a copy of either The Joy of Pickling or The Joy of Jams, Jellies, and Other Sweet Preserves. We'd love to share these books with you. Let me tell you a bit more about our guest. Linda Ziedrich is a freelance writer and editor. She lives with her family in Oregon, where she grows most of the fruits and vegetables she pickles, preserves, and otherwise prepares. She is a master gardener and a master food preserver. You'll find Linda online at www.lindaziedrich.com. And her last name is spelled Ziedrich. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. Linda Ziedrich, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Celeste.
How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you for having me.
Oh, my pleasure. You know, we spoke about 10, 11 years ago now.
I remember.
Yeah. Well, how is your garden doing this summer?
It's doing wonderfully. One awkward thing for me as somebody known for pickles is that I have a lot of trouble growing cucumbers. I have a lot of problems with cucumber beetles. But this year, for some reason, they're eating up all the chard and leaving the cucumbers alone, so I'm very happy.
You share tips for keeping cool in the jamming season. Your favorite tip is freeze the fruit and can it in the winter. But I'm wondering, what kind of weather have you had so far this summer? And do you preserve food all year round?
I do. I enjoy making jams and ketchups and other things like that in the winter. And I am freezing a lot of fruit right now. My daughter is home, and you may have noticed I dedicated my jam book to her because she's such a wonderful forager, and she doesn't have to go far. I've got a lot of raspberry plants and Marion berries, which are the favorite blackberry in Oregon, and she's just hauling in bucket load after bucket load of those, and most of them are going into the freezer.
Okay. Well, our phone lines have all lit up. People are eager to talk about preserving food. So let's go to the phones and take our first call this afternoon from a listener in Champaign on line one. Line one, hold on. Here we go. Line one, hi.
Hi. Okay. This is a total novice calling, so I can't say much about anything, but I do have some questions with regard to the differences between jam, jelly, chutney kind of things, and then I'd like to hear about a recipe for maybe some, I don't know, is it blackberry preserves? Again, there's another one. I don't know, what is it? What's a preserve? What's a jelly? What's a jam? All that.
Okay.
And then to do with the blackberries, they sound really good, and I'd like to pick some up at the farmer's market. And then another question about the pickling thing. I remember my aunts doing this every, you know, at the end of every season. But, you know, then there are some scares with, you know, not doing it properly. And so what are some of the basic routines you should think about if you're going to, or and supplies if you're going to actually start doing that? And I'll ring off, okay?
Okay. Thanks for the call.
Those are great questions, and I don't think you need to take any more calls, Celeste, because I could talk the whole time just answering those questions. But let me try to keep it pretty brief. Jam is mashed fruit with sugar and enough added acid if needed. It's sometimes needed with low-acid fruits. Heat it up to make a gel. So that's basically it. The sugar, the fruit, the sugar, and maybe a little lemon juice, and you cook it till it mounds in a cold bowl, and there's your jam. Jelly is made not from mashed fruit, but from juice. So you usually cook the fruit until the juice runs out, and then you strain out the juice. Usually you use a muslin bag, and then you take that juice, combine it with sugar, and you heat it up again until it gels, and put it in jars, and then you've got jelly. Preserves, I use preserves in two senses. In one sense, it can be any kind of preserved food, especially sweet preserves. But in another sense, there's another sense that's much more narrow, and that is fruit, whole fruits or pieces of fruits cooked in a fruit syrup. So there's a special technique for making preserves. Usually you do it this way. You put the fruit in sugar, and the sugar draws out the juices. So you have an uncooked syrup there. And then you cook that mixture, and the fruit shrivels up, and then you let the mixture cool, so the fruit is still sitting in the syrup, and the fruit swells up again. And then there's usually at least one other cooking step, and you end up with a syrup with fruit in it, or it may gel depending on the fruit and the exact way that you do it. So you may have a gelled syrup or not. Chutney, the Anglo-American style of chutney is cooked, and it's like jam, but it includes a lot of acid, usually vinegar, and spices, of course. Chutneys from India can be a whole lot of things. They can be a fresh relish, but there are always lots of spices. It may not be cooked at all, so it may fall more into the category of a relish. What else did you ask about?
She wanted to know about, she remembered a time when her family pickled, did a lot of pickling, and then there came some scary information about maybe we weren't doing it right, or maybe there was some danger to what we had preserved. And so maybe here you would share a couple of tips about what are the key things to keep in mind for doing preserving safely.
Okay. The key thing about pickles to remember is that they are sour, so they always use acid. There have been a few cases in the past when people have accidentally used apple cider instead of apple cider vinegar in trying to make pickles. And say if you want to make pickled beets and you use apple juice instead of vinegar, well, people could get botulism. Mm. Especially if you're canning, you want to make sure you have enough acid. And there's a rule of thumb that the USDA uses, and that is to use one part vinegar to one part water, no less vinegar than that. And when they say vinegar, they mean one that's standardized to 5% acid, or it might be as high as 6% or 7% acid. If you use homemade vinegar, you may not know how strong that acid is. So you have to be careful with that. And unless you can test the acidity, it's best to stick with commercial vinegar.
Yeah, okay. And anything anybody wants to know about pickling, I think, is in The Joy of Pickling. So she could look for this book. And also, County Extension is very helpful in sweet preserves, fruit preserves, and pickling as well.
Yeah, and Extension information is available on the web. I think that most of the states still have an Extension service, and so you can find it by the state, or you can find links to the state information at one master website, which I think is at the University of Georgia. It's Georgia, anyway.
Yeah.
The caller also asked about basic supplies.
Mm-hmm.
Canning jars. You don't have to can either jams and other sweet preserves or pickles. But if you want to do canning, canning jars are available in almost all supermarkets. You need a little tool called a jar lifter, and that's available in many supermarkets and in farm stores and kitchen supply stores and on the web. It's very inexpensive. You might think that you have to buy a big canner, but you may be able to use a large stock pot if you have one, and you can buy a rack to put in your stock pot. If you can't find that in a store, you can get one from the web. or you could even use a folded towel. You just want something to keep the jars from touching the bottom of the pot, because that could cause them to break. The jars, when you buy them, come with lids and rings. The rings are reusable. You use them until they've rusted away. And the lids you replace every time, and you can buy boxes of lids in supermarkets. Let's see what else.
And the jars are good unless you get a nick on them.
That's a really good point. When you use your jars over, it's good to check the rim and make sure that there's not a little nick there. It happens rarely, but it's a good idea to check, because if you have a nick, you won't get a good seal.
Okay. Well, let's go on to another caller, a listener in Belgium, Illinois. Line 4, hi.
Good morning, or good afternoon, I guess. Hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
The first caller really asked the major question I was going to have, but also, we've used to traditionally can peaches, which I thought was really the best flavor. We just take half peaches and water, maybe I don't even remember water. Maybe there was some water and sugar, and we just cook them up in a canning method, and you know, cap them up and everything. But when freezing came along, it made it so much easier. We kind of got away from that, and you know, I was kind of sorry to see that go, because I really cared for the canned flavor a little bit better than the frozen flavor. But we also tried to do something one time, and I don't know. Maybe you could help us with this. You take a whole piece of fruit, and you put it in a jar, and you essentially make a jelly with that. You know, so it's like whole fruit jelly. We could never get it to gel.
Linda, can you help them out?
It sounds like maybe what you want to make is preserves, do you think? Is the caller still there?
Yes. Hello.
I would follow a preserves recipe. Because then you can get pieces of fruit suspended in a jelly, but you've got to get the syrup up to a high temperature to get gelling. And usually when you can peaches, you're canning mostly in water.
Mm-hmm.
It can be anything from water to a heavy syrup, but it's far from being the syrup. You need to make a jelly, so I would use a recipe for preserves.
Can you heat the syrup up without heating the fruit up and then pour the syrup over it to get it to gel?
Good question.
Hmm.
I haven't tried that. Are you speaking specifically of peaches?
I prefer peaches, yes. But anything else, I guess, would be fine.
You know, I really don't know how that would come out. I would be sure to do a boiling water bath after trying that.
Mm-hmm.
But if you do try that, would you let me know how it turns out?
Sure. Be glad to.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. You are very welcome. Let's take another call, a listener on line 2 in Urbana. Hi.
Hi. My mom used to make watermelon pickles, and they were very sweet and very syrupy. Does a recipe or something like that ring a bell with you?
Yes. I do have a couple of recipes in my book. They used to be very popular when watermelons had thicker rinds. But you can still make them with the thin-rind watermelons. What you use is the white part in between the red and the green, and you cut away the green and you eat the red, and what you have left you cut into small pieces, the shape that you like, and they're kind of like preserves in the narrow sense. And there are watermelon preserves, and with those you wouldn't add much acid, but for a watermelon pickle you add vinegar, so you have the tartness. It's also kind of like sweet gherkin pickles.
So is the sweetness is in the rind itself, or you have to add something sweet?
Oh, those recipes always have lots of sugar. The white rind isn't very sweet at all, as you probably know. It's pretty tasteless.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, all right, thank you.
But that's a very popular pickle with people who know about it. It's just, you know, kind of old-fashioned now, and I think it's because our watermelons have such thin rinds. But it really isn't that much trouble to make, and people rave over it at picnics and potlucks.
Yeah. Let's take another call. A listener on line 1, also in Urbana. Good afternoon.
Hi, I'm another one that I remember. My mother made raspberry and currant jelly, and it not only tasted great, but it was really beautiful, and she'd line it up on a windowsill. But then I read in a cookbook somewhere that currants were in disfavor, and I couldn't figure out why. No, you shouldn't use currants and jelly, and I didn't know why.
Well, I don't think what was meant was that you shouldn't use currants and jelly. Currants make an excellent jelly. Currants, as plants, were out of favor in this country. They were actually illegal.
Yeah.
Most of the states.
What was that all about?
most of the states had laws against them, and the federal government had a law against them, and so people forgot how good currants were. They just were lost from our heritage. It's because the currant and other plants of the same species, the same genus, including gooseberries, are alternate hosts for a disease of pine trees. I think it's five pine blister rust or something like that. And so it was thought that the having currants in your home gardens threatened forestry. They finally figured out that we have so many of these species in the wild that it really doesn't matter. And those species that are in the forest are much more of a threat to the trees than plants in the garden. I think there may still be concern about certain species, because I just talked to a farmer who grows a lot of currants, and she said that another farmer who sells the plants says that a lot of them are coming from Scotland and being tested before they're being released, and that has something to do with how they serve as hosts for this disease, or whether they do. So there still may be limited availability of varieties because of that. But the availability isn't too limited, because I know there are lots of varieties of currants and gooseberries now available. The currants come in red, white, and pink. The white and the pink are just variations of the red.
And the flavor would be the same?
Yes, the flavor is the same. And I haven't seen white currant jelly. I don't have white currants myself. But red currant jelly is beautiful, beautiful, beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
It
yeah.
always comes out perfectly clear, and it has a bright pinky red color, and it has a tart, sprightly flavor.
Mm-hmm.
And it's wonderful for making jams and jellies because it's very rich in pectin. And that's one reason that it's sometimes combined with other fruits. If you want your jam to gel more firmly, you can add your currants and get a firmer gel. And raspberries are kind of low in pectin,
mm-hmm.
and they have the same basic color as currants. So if you combine the two, you get a firmer gel, and you get the wonderful strange raspberry flavor combined with the currants. And
yeah.
I have not made raspberry currant jelly myself, but I think that's a really good idea. And
it's excellent. It's really excellent. Well, thank you for clarifying that.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for the call this afternoon. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Linda Ziedrich is our guest. She's a freelance writer and editor. She's a master gardener and a master food preserver. She's the author of The Joy of Pickling and The Joy of Jams, Jellies, and Other Sweet Preserves. My name is Celeste Quinn. Listeners, you can join us this afternoon with a phone call with your questions and comments. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Toll-free 800-222-9455. Let's take another call, a listener in Urbana on line 3. Hello.
Hello. I was calling about the use of pectin. I just turned on my radio and heard the wonderful things you were talking about, and I love making jams and jellies. And I've always wondered if I should be using commercial pectin. I mean, that makes me a little bit nervous. Sometimes it gives it like this a strange aftertaste. And if I could find alternative ways to, like, you know, like you were just saying that currants were so rich in pectin, if I can find other ways to, like, reach those ideal pectin levels so my jellies will harden.
Okay, great question. And Linda, you can help her out.
Yeah, when I was growing up, my mother always used commercial pectin. And when the low methoxyl pectins came out, I think that was probably in the 80s, late 70s or 80s, I started using those, and I liked those better because they didn't cause jam to gel as firmly. And that's those are often called low sugar or non-sugar pectins. That's the way they may be labeled in the store, and they gel in the presence of calcium rather than sugar. So you can make jam with a lot less sugar with those. But once I started using those, I started thinking, well, do I really need commercial pectin at all? Because I was aware that fruits have pectin of their own. And that's really why I wrote the book about jams and jellies. The whole book is about making sweet preserves without commercial pectin. I don't call for any commercial pectin in the book. And most fruits will make an adequate gel without any added pectin at all. But if you want to add some, you can use currants, you can use apples, you can use quinces. I think those are the most pectiny fruits that we have.
Okay, and what's involved in making your own pectin?
You make the juice through a heat extraction method. So you cook the fruit and then drain out the juice through a jelly bag, through muslin. And then you can take that juice and boil it down by half, and you get your own liquid pectin. You can also do this with oranges. I forgot about oranges. Oranges and apples are the two sources of commercial pectin. And so oranges are also rich in pectin. I don't use them much because I don't live in orange country.
You live in apple country.
Right. But oranges do work well. They have to be cooked for a long time. So that's, I think, much longer than apples or quinces.
Okay. Should we go back and ask for a follow-up? No. Okay. So we'll move on. Thanks for the call. The listener has rung off. Let's go to a listener. I think we're going to go to a listener in Chicago, line 4.
Could you tell me your views on drying fruit and vegetables to the extent that they are a pretty good way of maintaining food supply rather than going through all the canning and preserving and cooking procedures, you know? It seems to be popular. And then as far as gardening and growing things, have you had any experience or have you known of aquaculture, what ways of growing food? Could you comment on any of that, please?
Sure. I dry a lot of fruits myself, and that includes tomatoes and tomatillos, which you might consider vegetables. It's the best thing to do if you live in a place that's hot and dry, and so you can do it just with solar energy. My only reluctance here, where I live, is that I need to use an electric dryer, and it does use a lot of energy. But I find it well worth doing. I dry oodles of tomatoes in particular. And the dried fruits and vegetables are the best thing for hiking and especially for backpacking. And, of course, you don't have to add any sugar. So if you want to avoid sweets, that's you want to avoid refined sugar, that's a great way to do it. As for
aquaculture,
no, I have no experience with that. And what I have seen of aquaculture is done commercially. And I think I had a friend who tried a little bit at home, but she didn't have success. So, no, home aquaculture, I really don't know anything about that.
Yeah, apparently they're successful in many parts of to grow a hydroponic food. And I find it to be tasty a few times I've had and enjoyed. Then, of course, you have the matter of rather than preserving and drying and freezing, you have juicing, which is another thing. How are you on juicing things and maintaining juice other than your immediate refreshment? Do you ever store up much juices?
Yeah, I make with my family a lot of apple cider, and some of it we freeze, and some of it I can, and I pasteurize it just briefly, so it really doesn't lose much flavor. I also have a device that's called a steam juicer, and it works kind of like an espresso pot that you put on the stove. so there's water in the bottom and fruit in the middle, and then the fruit's on top. Anyway, the steam comes up and it goes down, and you get in one section you get juice.
I recently tried a green apple juice, and it had a little touch of carbonation, and it was very delicious. Well, thank you very much for your good thoughts.
You're welcome. I was going to say that a steam juicer is great for making jelly because the heat brings out the pectin in the fruit. When you cold press juices, you don't get a lot of pectin, but when you heat the fruits, you get a lot of pectin. So that's best for jelly making. Some fruit juices that you make with a steam juicer might taste too pectin-y. You can taste the viscosity on your tongue, so they might taste too pectin-y to drink straight. But they also might be too strong in flavor to drink straight. So you might mix them with water and possibly some sugar.
Okay, and I'll do a follow up for this caller. A brief word about making your own syrups.
Yes, syrups are easy to make. Again, you can use the steam juicer or cook the fruit in a pot and then strain it through a jelly bag. And then take that juice, and the basic USDA recipe is this. You take 5 cups of strained heat-extracted fruit juice, combine it in a saucepan with 7 cups of sugar, bring the mixture to a boil and simmer just 1 minute, and put it into jars. You don't want to cook it longer because you don't want to get a gel. You don't want it to turn into jelly if you're calling it syrup. I also have recipes in my book for a similar method, but you take the fruit while it's still raw and you let it sit out for a couple of days so it begins to ferment a little bit, and you get just a little bit of wine-like flavor, just a little bit of fermentation, and then you mix it with the sugar and heat it up and bottle it.
Let's take another call. Next, we go to a listener on line 2, calling in from Urbana. Hi.
Hi. I have a question, and she may have answered it somewhat. I tried this year again to make orange marmalade, and I had a recipe from a book that I think it was called An Old Farm Cookbook. It was an old recipe, but because you mentioned that you don't need, there is a lot of pectin in oranges, I carefully followed the recipe with the ratio of oranges to water and so forth, but I'm still having a problem. I forget how long it's been sitting on the shelf, but it should have gelled by now. I don't know. Do you have something in your book that gives recommended ratios? Or I cooked it longer than the recipe suggested too. So I'm trying to problem solve here and see why it's not setting up.
Yeah. I'm not sure about that, but let me just look at the basic recipe I have. It could be the kind of oranges because they vary. In my recipe, I combine the orange with lemon.
Yes, I did that.
lemons have the bitter oranges that were traditionally used to make marmalade are very rich in pectin, and they're quite acid. And so, if you add lemons to navel oranges or Valencia oranges, you'll get more pectin and acidity. There are different ways to make marmalade. So you can use mostly the orange part of the peel,
mm-hmm.
outer rind,
mm-hmm.
or you can use part of the white part, called albedo, I think, or you can use all of it.
Yeah.
You can also have it in little shreds, or you can have it in big pieces. I'll go through the method that I have here. I use an electric juicer to juice the oranges.
Mm-hmm.
Then I strain the juice into a pot, and I put the strained seeds and pulp into a piece of cheesecloth, and also any of the membrane that's remaining in the peels. Then that cheesecloth, and oh, if they're navels, those can go in the cheesecloth too. And then tie up the cheesecloth and add it to the kettle. Then I cut the peel into thin slices and add water. So this recipe uses 1 3/4 pounds oranges, 1/2 pound lemons, and 9 cups water. It's a lot of water,
yeah.
because the pectin in oranges goes a long way.
It seemed like it was a lot of water, and that's why I was surprised volume I got was much more than I expected. So, okay.
So then this mixture is simmered for 2 hours, and that's to soften the peel and to draw out the pectin. And during that time, the whole mixture does reduce somewhat because you get a lot of steaming. So then you take out the cheesecloth bag and you add water. And in this recipe, it's 9 cups sugar, so the mm-hmm. same quantity as, mm-hmm. of sugar as water. Dissolve the sugar, raise the heat, and boil it until a little bit of the mixture mounds in a cold dish. And that's it. And you put it in jars.
Well, what I was anticipating is maybe as I open each jar, cooking it some more down and see if I could get it to gel, and then just leaving that in the refrigerator and doing that with each of the jars instead of opening them all and recooking it all and recanning it.
Recooking it might help. You could also add a little packaged pectin and recook it. You could also just serve it as a sauce over, say, lemon pound cake or some other kind of cake or ice cream and not worry so much about the gelling. I don't know how runny your marmalade is, but I'm finding that people these days tend to prefer softer jams and marmalades. So, you know, maybe it's not so runny as you think.
Okay.
And it can take a week for gelled preserves to completely gel. So how long has yours been in the cupboard?
I'm sure it's been at least a couple of weeks.
Okay.
Well, you know, and even on the pectin that I used when I made some other jams and so forth, where it says even with the use of pectin, it may take up to 2 weeks for some things to gel. So I wondered, you know, but this I did not put the pectin in because, as you said, the oranges have a lot of pectin in them naturally.
Yeah.
So I didn't bother with the pectin when I was making these. So.
Yeah. Well, I'm sorry I can't explain just what went wrong there.
Well, that you give me a lot of, information that helps. So I think the next time I try to make this, I might look up your recipe and give that a shot.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good luck. Let's take another call. A listener in Champaign on line 3. Hi.
Yeah, that's me.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to pass along something my daughter told me from her in-laws. They live in Serbia, and I guess they don't have commercial pectin there. They use zucchini, grated zucchini, as a source of pectin, and this was for making apricot preserves.
That's really interesting. I've never heard such a thing.
They said they made 20. They took 20 kilos of apricots and two or three large zucchinis, and that's all it took. So that's what they told me. I'm not aware that I haven't tried this myself, and I'm not aware that zucchini has a lot of pectin in it. It may be something other than pectin that's causing it to set up. But at any rate, that's their recipe.
Yeah, there is that jelliness around the seeds if the zucchini are really big. But thank you for that information, and I certainly will try to find out more.
And it's interesting that in Linda's book, she has a recipe. This is the joy of jams, jellies, and other sweet preserves. She has a recipe for zucchini preserves, which are called marrow preserves.
Yeah, that's the English term, because zucchini preserves are made in England. It's an English recipe, and as far as I know, they're not popular anywhere in the United States, so I wanted to use the English term there.
Yeah.
Marrow is simply overgrown zucchini, the kind that in the U.S. gets left on the neighbor's porch or made into zucchini bread. And they have their own preferred variety, so, you know, they're not the same varieties that you may be growing in your garden, but basically, they are zucchini. Marrow is zucchini.
Yeah, and this recipe involves a little lemon and ginger, and I think this sounds really good.
Yeah, it's a lot like watermelon preserves.
Oh, okay. Let's take another call. Next, we go to a listener on line 1 in Charleston. Hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Perspective may be a little bit skewed because I think I'm from a younger generation, but it seems like we have lost, at least in my generation, some of those old world skills that would make enable somebody to be more self-sufficient. So do you think it's time, especially with our economy the way it is, to introduce some of these skills into secondary education, especially like a community college? Have you been approached by anybody to do something like that, or do you feel yourself that that would be a good position to take to introduce some of these skills, life skills, to secondary education?
Yeah, well, I think people are doing a really great job of teaching themselves right now. In my area, we still have an active extension service, so people take master gardening and master food preserving courses. We have entrepreneurs who've started their own little programs. I have a friend in Portland, a couple of friends, who teach classes in preserving. And books are selling well. Sales of canning jars have just surged. So people are really taking an interest. And I hope that they're learning that it's really not as difficult as they think. That seems to be the biggest problem for people, is they think that these things are difficult, and they're really not. And you can do a lot of preserving without canning. You can certainly do most of your preserving without using a pressure canner, which is a little scary even to me. I never use mine because I don't need it for the kind of preserving I do. But it's really not that difficult, and I hope that people will just try it.
Yeah. Also, I think it's really encouraging, Linda, that you have included recipes in both of these books where you can make just a little bit of this or that and do it quickly. You don't have to make gallons. You can make a pint.
Yeah. And when you're trying to make jam or jelly, it's best to work in very small quantities. Then you get the gel. Otherwise, you have to cook the fruit and sugar a lot longer to get a decent gel.
Yeah. We're coming down to the last couple of minutes here we have on the program. One of the things that I guess I'll ask you now, because the last caller mentioned the economy, I got a kick out of the joy of pickling. Pickled meats, including pickled pig's ears. Now, this is, I'm pretty sure, pretty much a lost art at this point, because where are you going to get pig's ears to begin with? Because the way we go to the market and get our pork nicely packaged. This is a real, either a conversation starter or a stopper, pickled pig's ears. Here we're using everything but the squeak. Really? Is it tough to make pickled pig's ears, and what are they like?
It's very easy, and they turn out just chewy and sour and salty like other pickles. But just it's sort of a bar food, a fun thing to chew on. I made pickled pig's ears when we raised pigs. And so I only did it a couple of times, and I haven't seen ears in the markets. So I can think of some ethnic markets I might go to where I might be able to get ears. I have found that pig snouts are very easy to get in my area. They're sold in Mexican sections of some supermarkets around here. And pickled pig snouts are popular some places. I just read about this, and I can't remember in what country it was that I was reading about. But snouts are a lot like ears, and a pickle would be made much the same way from a snout.
One more caller this afternoon, and we'll have to be quick. McLean County, line one, hi.
Hi, really good question. I want to pickle my ginger. Any ideas?
I have to look up my recipe, but that's a popular thing to have with sushi, say. It's in the stores you might find that it's quite red, but that's usually from added dye, and when you make it yourself, you'll find it comes out just slightly pinkish or not pinkish at all. So if there's time, I will give you a basic Japanese recipe. Do we have time, Celeste?
Yeah, we got about a minute and a half tops.
Okay.
I think we can give her the sense of it, I think.
Okay. I bring a quart of water to a boil, add a half pound of very thinly sliced fresh ginger, the kind that has hardly any skin on it. You can just scratch the skin off with your fingernail, say. Bring the water back to a boil, drain the ginger, let it cool, put it into a bowl, sprinkle it lightly with a little salt, and then bring to a boil in a saucepan a cup of rice vinegar. I don't know if I said how much ginger, half pound. Bring to a boil a cup of rice vinegar, 3 tablespoons sugar, and a teaspoon of soy sauce, the light Japanese soy sauce. It's called usukuchi soy sauce, if you can get it. And stir to dissolve the sugar and salt. Pour the hot liquid over the ginger. Mix it well, and that's it. Store it in the refrigerator. It'll keep for months and months.
Okay, makes about 1 pint. And would a mandolin be useful for slicing that ginger?
Yes, it would.
Okay, all right. I've got it. Well, lots of things to try here, and we've only scratched the surface. And I want to thank everyone who called in this afternoon, and I also want to thank Linda Ziedrich, our guest this afternoon. Linda, we'll have to have you back on maybe when we get closer to the end of the growing season, and we'll talk again.
All right, great.
Okay, lots of demand.
Thank you,
for
Sarah.
Linda Ziedrich. She is the author of The Joy of Pickling and The Joy of Jams, Jellies, and Other Sweet Preserves. Both are published by the Harvard Common Press.